Okay, I just checked, and the library is open, and it's a free for all. Anybody who wants to come can come. This is the Reskilling and Reusing event at the Portland Library, and it is May, the last Tuesday of May. We have this as a monthly event, and people just come as they wish. We don't have a lot of attendance today, and I think it has something to do with people are all worn out from Memorial Day weekend, but I'm just guessing. I know I am, so that's perfectly legitimate in terms of my perspective. Now, I wanted to encourage listeners to say to themselves, okay, what's it in for me? Oh, that's a good question. And so I'm going to basically try to basically lay out why would anyone would be interested in attending anything at all, and why we would want to do it with related to reskilling and reusing. And then I want to explore some features of that in terms of narrative as well as a PowerPoint presentation, just great slides that are going to be posted too. So it'll be at metagenny.com/reskill, and there will be a blog right there. You can go right to the PowerPoint as well as the audio file for those who are interested. Now, I've got two devices right now going. One is my cell phone, Wi-Fi cell phone thing, and it produces pretty good results. And then I have the laptop as well, and that doesn't produce so good results unless I amplify it through Audacity several times over, and then it produces good results. So that's how I have to do using Audacity in the laptop. So in the first instance, I just think that it's very important to consider the idea of meeting together. And if anyone happens to be in the neighborhood of Portland, Louisville, Kentucky, there is a Portland Anchor, and the May issue just came out, which was penned by yours truly, and it basically said it's important to get together and as a community and vocalize ideas, etc. And so that pretty much relates to what we're doing right here with the Reskilling Reusing event. The article has to do with the reading a book, but that's kind of somewhat similar and somewhat different. So the with respect to why reskilling and reusing, I want to just say that I think that there's the ability to be self-actualized as well as resilient, and being able to reuse things and to be skilled on very practical aspects is awesome and can never be taken away from a person until Alzheimer's sets in. And so that being the case, one looks at decades of awesome human beingness with respect to kind of getting things done by yourself rather than having to hire it out or buy it at Kroger, etc. And along those lines, I had a thought this month, and I pinned it down. And here's what I said, and it relates somewhat. It says this: clearly, the more I shop and look for things to buy, the more desire I have for things I currently do not have. Nothing wrong with feeling the need to have things, but manufacturing that need from thin air is a wrong-headed feature, and it is emphasizing the lack of something. Our needs are air and water and food and warmth or coolness, shade from the sun, and a sense of belonging, and the feeling that this will be maintained over our entire lifetime and the lifetimes of our children and theirs, etc. So that's kind of where we can put our focus of our attention and ask questions, you know, is what I'm doing towards those ends of maintaining our lives as we want to in a meaningful and self-respecting and respectful of others. Yeah, that's good. Now, that's of course, that also goes into the fact that our world is changing around us both politically and climactically. So we have to look at features of re-educating ourselves and then reskilling ourselves associated with those changes that are coming down the pike, not just trying to survive what was last generation's issues, concerns, and lifestyle. That being said, I want to make an announcement that there is an organization called Louisville Grows, which sells seedlings of small little vegetables and things. Now, they're done with their season of selling, and it's kind of late in the year, so they're just, if you just approach them and say, hey, you got any extra, can I go pick some up? There might be some if you want to start your garden late. Now, the library here has an awesome bunch of bucket gardens with lettuce and all kinds of other good stuff in it. So they don't need any seedlings from Louisville Grows, but you know, the library is leading the way in terms of what one should be thinking about, and Louisville Grows is providing an opportunity to go ahead and do it yourself by getting seedlings already started and well along the way. I want to also announce that there will be an upcoming an associated event affiliated with this reskilling and reusing, which is called the Neighborhood Association is having a health and education committee meeting in this library room, 33rd and Northwestern Parkway, next Monday. I think that would be probably June, somewhere like 3rd or 4th, before 5th maybe. So that's kind of relates a little bit, and just an advertisement. That also is a monthly event, but it's a little less, more, not quite so oriented as the reskilling and reusing, which is the last Tuesday of every month. Set your calendars to that. Now, that all being said, I probably will want to go ahead and light up my guitar, because I want to reuse an old song. It's probably, I don't know, like 60 years old at this point. And I think it was sung by Roger Daltrey of The Who. And it goes like this. We're fighting in the street with our children at our feet. And the morals that they worship will be gone. I tip my hat to the new constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. Smile and grin, all the changes all around. Pick up my guitar and play, just like yesterday. And then I get on my knees and pray that we won't get fooled again, won't get fooled again. Yeah. That was short and sweet, and just a harbinger of things to come, because there will be a guitar performance by yours truly at the Portland Fair on June 3rd and 4th at 7 o'clock for 1 hour. That song will be part of it. That was just a small excerpt of the concert. There will be many other songs related to reusing and reskilling, of course, in many different ways. So be on the lookout for that. So I wanted to start and talk about something that happened when I was biking to and from downtown. Okay, when I was going downtown, I noticed that there was a brewmeister area that had a big tub of spent grain. So then I was doing something downtown, and I thought about it for a while, came back and got a bag and filled it up with the spent grain, just sitting out there waiting for it to be picked up by the farmers, probably. Not sure, but it's just kind of sitting out there on the side of the road. It was very, very hot. It is so hot, it would certainly burn my fingers if I put my fingers in there a little bit. And it was not a hot day. So what happens is that there's active metabolism going on in there. And what is being growing and making it all hot? Well, it's called yeast. So you have spent grain with lots of yeast on it which the beer has been harvested from. Thank you very much. And they'll probably be selling that, I wouldn't doubt, but that's their deal. And when I, you know, put the spent grain in a bag and put it in the refrigerator, I thought to myself, whoa, there's awesome yeast strains in there. And one could use the same yeast that is used in making the beer that was in the beer that was brewed on the side of the road there when the spent grain was there. So it's kind of cool to think, oh gosh, I can probably have some aspects of the same kind of nuances, because yeast strains are not the same. If you go ahead and look at wine making, there are hundreds of different kinds of yeast strains, and they all produce different tastes associated with you know, how they want the end product to taste. And sometimes yeast dies in alcohol or doesn't die in high concentrations of alcohol. So you can end up with wine that's a lot of sugar and a little bit of alcohol. Or you can have like no sugar at all and it's all like 20% alcohol or something, depending upon the yeast strain. How interesting is that? So not only could the yeast be used for you know, making other beers or potentially wine from the spent grain, but one could also just use that yeast and put it in flour and make a sourdough as well. So just because there is this leftover thing on the side of the road doesn't mean that you don't have the opportunity to just scoop some up and just look the other way while you're grabbing it, and there you go. You got yeast from some sophisticated aspects, which I'll stop talking about that because I could go on, right? Yeah. So that has to do with reusing, and it has to do with reskilling. Now, another aspect I want to talk about is that I was biking the other day to Kroger, and actually I was in the car, and I wanted to just kind of look across the street, and I saw that there's a big open field, and I wonder who owned that property and whether or not they wanted to turn that into, I don't know, an apple orchard or grow some sort of crops that would be, again, kind of interesting. Maybe, I don't know if there's nasty chemicals in the soil. One could always produce, you know, be having some plants grow that would tolerate that, as well as maybe even the fruit wouldn't be that toxic. Even if there is toxicity in the soil, this is how things are done. If you can't do raised beds everywhere, because, I don't know, raised beds are kind of expensive and maybe not all that necessary, there's a discussion there, and it's worth having for quite some time, sustained conversation about raised beds. But I looked at the grass growing on the wheat, on the field there across from Kroger in Portland, and it was really growing well. That grass looked vibrant. And so I'm not saying that there's not nasty chemicals, I'm just saying that there's green things growing really well on there, and it might be kind of fun to explore. Not that anything's going to happen, but explore who owns it and would they be interested in such things as allowing strangers or people who buy in, you know, to being gardeners or maybe an organization that is associated with growing things to kind of try it out a little bit and then kind of organically grow as responsibility and comfort level increase. Huh? Why not? Okay, so I have got another concept I wanted to bring up, and it has nothing to do with, well, actually, it does. So I've got some grapes and passion fruit in my yard, and the grapes the grape vines are growing on the ground, and I'm going to put some 4x4s that were dumpster dived in the alleys, and put the 4x4s in, and put some 2x or whatever, and get I think it's called a trestle, a strut, what is that called, a gazebo, something like that, to make it so that the grapevine grows up. into that rather than growing along the ground, which is going to be less than ideal. And then the passion fruit is in a bad spot, so I'll just move that over, and also it would climb up anything too. So just there's instances where you have a plot of land, you can just stick a 4x4, you know, a big, it's not a 2x4, it's 2 2x4s stuck together, and it's a 4x4, or you can find a 4x4 or 2 2x4s, and you can glue them and screw them together. And then you either get a plug of cement and drop that in there first if you have a post hole digger and you want to find someone who has a post hole digger so you can borrow it. And those are kind of nice. You just kind of make a nice narrow hole and then use an existing post that is already filled with cement at the bottom, which people dig up and put in the alley again, which I have now dumpster dived those things, and you just put it in the ground and you already have the cement bottom ready to go. Or in another instance, there's just a plug, a cylinder of cement, and then on top of the cylinder of cement, you can of course just rest the 4x4 on top of it and it won't sink. So there are ways for folks who have land to dig holes, put cement in there so it won't tilt or sink, and then have things grow on them. And it doesn't really take much to do that. And you'll all of a sudden have three-dimensional farming going on instead of growing lettuce, you know, 1.5 feet off the ground. You've got passion fruit and grapes growing up to, you know, 8-10 feet high. And the same thing, I guess, goes with other fruit, other vines too, but those are just two that are, I'm thinking of most notably this month. Okay, so that's the first slide. I got more things to talk about, which has to do with the concept of, I mentioned the word biking. And I think that there are some heavy things, like the other day I was wanting to transport a potted tree, on my bicycle for about a half a mile, and it was a struggle because there was a lot of dirt in there. And I was thinking, how would be a good way to transport heavy things on a bike? And if you have a little pannier or something in the back, it just tends to fall over if it's over, like, you know, 20 pounds, and if it has some height to it, it'll fall over. So that's the struggle, and maybe there's some sort of a little cart or something that could be attached behind a little trailer. And I actually kind of have some of those things. You just need to put it into the lifestyle, because you can find wheels in any alley. And the wheels are great because then you can tie them into some sort of a thing. You know, little tiny toddler toys, they've got wheels on them. You can use that as a base, or you can use skateboards, etc. There are things to start with, and if you've got a drill gun and some screws and some wood, you can just make something just like that. For those who happen to need the ability to just kind of move things around the neighborhood here and there, potentially, I guess, maybe even Kroger groceries. So that's a challenge. I don't have a home run there. I just have a potentiality to describe. Now, I was at the Mayor's Hike and Bike on yesterday, on Monday, for Memorial Day, and what I appreciated about interacting with the people there was the fact that I had a blank, large piece of paper, like 11 by 17, and with a, you know, Sharpie thick black ink pen, just kind of put down some a little open space for them to mark down their favorite vegetable or their favorite spice or et cetera. And what I appreciated about it was that 11 by 17 paper was really thick, and I think that holds down really well. If it rained, it wouldn't get ruined right away. or if it got windy, it held up nicely. So it was really thick. And on the opposite side of it was old posters from my church that recycles it. And so instead of recycling, I just went ahead and just kept a few for such an event as this, which is just kind of hand drawing some questions and having people fill them out at a tabling event. So that's a perfect use of something that was destined for the recycle bin, but it was a beautifully white, thick piece of paper on the backside. And so I reused it, and we'll probably save the documentation of all the ideas of what people had to say about their favorite foods and how much fiber it had and all that kind of stuff. So that's just neat because it can be neat. One challenge I've had this month that I need to follow up as I review here is the idea of creating a granule of complete, healthy, and easy to use spices. And there, of course, are spices of oily, salty, sugary, and acidic. And those things can be put together. And here's how to do it, okay? Because, for instance, peanut butter as the base has the fat, and that has an excellent mouthfeel and et cetera. And then one can take that peanut butter, and then with it you can add lots of salt, sugar, and a powder called citric acid, which basically just adds a vinegar taste to it, but it's in powder form. And then you stir that up, and then what happens is the peanut butter gets dry, and then it starts to form balls as you stir. And then it becomes what they call little granules. And so you want to have little granules, and you want to then put them in a tray and dry them out in an oven or in the sun, and then you want to crush them. And now you have basically not table salt, not table sugar, but you have granules of peanut butter with salt, sugar, and citric acid. And you pour it on there, and you don't have to add anything else. It has the complete components of everything that would taste wonderful. And obviously you can change it up and you could add other things at any time, but that would be a complete great mouthfeel just like that. It'd be great for kids, it'd be great for me. So I would like to explore the idea of creating such a food, which is granulated spices, essentially, and full component. And in this society where, let's get the easy button, give me a pill for all the saving I need, and well, there it is right there, your pill, which will give you the ability for any food to taste good. And I submit to you that if you have some soggy cardboard and then you put some of that stuff on it, it's actually going to taste pretty good. That's how powerful spices are. So one needs to obviously separate out spices from the type of food you eat, because you can eat healthy or not healthy food, and then you can spice it with healthy or not healthy or incompletely spiced things. So there's a great dialogue, and I hope to follow up that, just to experiment with that. And I don't think there's any problem with making a company out of that, because I don't think that exists. This month I also had an idea of making a soccer goal out of dumpster dived PVC piping. Now, PVC, that's what we use for plumbing, and it's really just dirt cheap. If one goes ahead and got to go to Lowe's or Home Depot and buy some PVC glue, I guess just regular glue would work, because you don't need to make it airtight. So just take some glue and put, and maybe buy an elbow, a couple elbows. And I think you need 6 elbows and 6 pipe sections, and you can make a goal, a soccer goal. And if you make it kind of a mini one, you can put it in your car, van, whatever. And then the interesting thing is that more and more I've seen entities where they play soccer in tennis courts with these small little these nets, and some of them are fancy and you can buy them for $100, $200, you know, and they, but you could just make your own from pipe, plastic pipe that's in the alley, and make one up. I suppose you've got to somehow got to find the net, the netting, which can be made out of something or other too, not too hard. And then you can play soccer in at the tennis court, which sounds like a really fun thing to do in addition to playing tennis. Of course, one can always play tennis at the tennis court too. And as part of the, if I may add an advertisement, there's a health and education initiative from Portland Now about having weekly tennis at Lannan Park on Mondays at 6 o'clock for an hour. So anyone can show up anytime until it gets at 6 o'clock. It's dark with like daylight savings time in November or something like that. Okay, so I was changing subjects. I was listening to a radio program, and these things are on the internet. You just download them, and you can listen to interesting speakers for like an hour on any topic. You just kind of have to find your passion and go for it. And then this talk was from a place called Radio Eco Shock. It was a person who said, we did the analysis and found out that in order to do carbon offsetting, which means, you know, you're using a lot of carbon and spitting it off into the atmosphere, that's a kind of a negative. I think everybody, all scientists agree with that one. And what happens is that you've got to, like, what are you going to do about that? Well, if you plant 20 trees a year, you are offsetting the amount of carbon that you're spitting off into the sky by your own lifestyle of electricity and car use and things like that and heating. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I have been oriented my mind towards planting trees. So there's lots of saplings that popped up over the winter, and instead of mowing them down, basically just put them into potted plants. Put those potted plants and then put them into dirt, and you can find places for them that they will survive. It's easier said than done. You can find three or four places maybe, but 5, 6, 7, 8, 19, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, gets like, whoa, you got to start talking to your neighbors about, yeah, you want this tree? And people are like, well, I don't know, which goes to the next question of a reskill of how to chop down trees for not a lot of money. People don't want to, be responsible for chopping down a tree that gets too big and it gets diseased or whatever, and it's out of pocket and there's nothing you can do about it. It's just lost money. So why have a tree in the first place? Well, that's maybe has some merit to it, and then therefore you can either plant a tree in the boulevard, which is between the sidewalk and the street, just plant them there, and the city is responsible for those. Or you can kind of prune the tree as it grows, and maybe not, and keep it low every year, trim it down so it's not an enormous tree. I don't know, maybe that's not a good idea. Or if a tree does get sick and needs to be put down, is there a way over a couple of years that you can just take limbs as you go along? Now that goes in line with the idea that a person probably should be fit enough to maybe go up on a ladder or climb a tree with a saw or other things. Now, of course, there's a lot of danger with really, really heavy branches. So obviously you want to try the smaller branches first. If the smaller branches are out on the limbs, farther out, so it's a little more dangerous because it's kind of a little weak in terms of, the branches can wave in the wind rather than being firm by the by the bark, by the trunk. So we have definitely a quandary, but I see it as a potentiality for giving everybody who's able-bodied the ability and the consciousness to go ahead and take on these trees. And then if you have a fireplace, obviously burn the wood after it's aged a while. Or if you don't want to burn it, just chop it up and put it into the alley and have the city take it away over you know, every week for several years perspective. And it's just a way for my uppity self to say, yeah, I don't need to spend $1,700 on taking down a tree. But not that $1,700 is what it is. Obviously, you can, there's all kinds of average amounts and minimum and maximum, and that's fine too. That's another conversation. But having the ability to climb a tree, of course, is one thing that I find myself valuing. Now, I wanted to address the idea that I have some pictures in the PowerPoint associated with this presentation. And if you do look on the second page of the presentation, you'll see a picture of some green grass, and around it there's the picture. Someone took a picture, obviously from a top of a from a tree, standing in a tree, sitting in a tree, and then looking down at the grass, which happens to be at a cemetery. And you know, for this being Memorial Day weekend, et cetera, it certainly does remind one that one can certainly climb a tree in a cemetery and be reminded of lots of good behaviors and people that have happened, have done in the past, and are now in a cemetery somewhere. So that's an interesting feature that is, it's a nice picture to look at if you want to as well. Actually, there's probably a couple of pictures of the trees, one from above and then one from the side. And if you see the cemetery, you'll notice that there's a stone wall around the cemetery. And one feature about that, and this is kind of maybe a reskilling, is the skill of every time you see like a brick wall or something, or a stone wall, something like that, it provides an opportunity for someone to exercise, do isometrics, and for instance, jump up on and jump down and jump up and try to maneuver yourself on it. So kids would certainly appreciate that, as well as any adult. Obviously, it's called real life and you can fall, but if it's only, you know, 5 feet tall, then it's not that, you just got to be mindful and it's not a big deal. So look for stone walls and climb them at any time, because it's free to exercise, and it's kind of a unique thing that most people don't have. Most people don't have something 5 feet tall that you can kind of jump up on and try to leap over in some sort of a climbing move that has a name, but it escapes me now. Mantling, I think it's called. So I think last month I may have mentioned all the different ways that there are to reskill, repurpose things, and I do get emails from an entity that provides all kinds of materials, and it's selling it on the internet saying, here, what are you going to do with this? And this is always a challenge for us as a culture to, you know, please don't put nice things into the compost or put nice things into the landfill, but find another purpose for them. And maybe Craigslist helps, or maybe eBay, or maybe a distributorship email blast like that which I am going to describe here. So this, since last month, here's some other instances that I see that have been announced. And one of them is a U.S. Open snowboard stuff. So what do you think about that? Snowboarding stuff. I haven't even opened that email because I don't know if I'm interested in that. And it says salt, 39,000 pounds of salt. I'm not sure what to do with that. Here's another one, 3/16-inch stainless tubing and lots and lots of stucco that's still in the pail. What do you do with lots of stucco? It's overwhelming. How about a gym bleacher wood? So all the wood from a whole bunch of bleachers. And I think they do it in terms of an auction. So they just get it really cheap and then they auction it off and then you buy it for what it ends up with. And here looks like there's a brewery 8-foot tall fire pit. Okay, and then there's also cheap weed killer. And here is more steel pipe, 1/2 inch to 12 inch steel pipe. Or there's a repurposed treehouse if you want. So I guess you can turn this, you can really turn this into being professional, or you can just live it in a lifestyle, and all of them are good. I do want to mention that, and I hope it's on the next page of this presentation. Yes, it is. The very first thing that I'm seeing on the next slide, slide 3, is a picture of a dumpster at Riverfront Park, right downtown Louisville. And they had a big Memorial Day weekend event, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there is a green recycle bin, 55 gallon, that's right next to the enormous orange garbage bin dumpster. And there are tons of recyclable cardboard that I can see emanating, you know, from the top, and it's not going to be recycled, if at all. It's an indication, because the green box, the green recycling bin, is not stuffed with cardboard. So there was no attempt to even try to salvage some for recycling. It's just all done and done garbage. So I appreciate the efforts that the city brings forth in terms of, you know, having initiatives like reusing and eliminating our waste. However, there's great opportunities for the city to certainly be a bellwether, for the city to be a leader, for the city to show the way in symbolic manners, because it's just one dumpster. I mean, obviously other places have tons and tons of dumpsters, but we don't see them, and it's not associated directly with the city trying to be having a fun event. So take a look at that picture and, voice and become aware that the city has great more potential and could easily try more. On the same slide, you will see next to that is a picture of an old shed in some flowers. And so a reusing activity this last month is for one community garden to say, okay, you can have our old shed because they have a new shed. And then then another community garden, which is just starting up, can be having the shed. So the idea then would be how to take down a shed that's about 6 or 7 foot square. Where do you take the sawzall? And it doesn't have any electricity nearby, so you almost need an electrical generator. Which comes in handy if you need a sawzall in the middle of a garden. And so one needs to figure out how to take down the shed without hurting any of the flowers nearby. And there you go. Instead of just ripping down the shed, saying, we got a new shed, just destroy the old one, that is going to be repurposed to a, not repurposed, but actually just moved and probably be deconstructed and then reconstructed in the new community garden. So that's neat. Okay, another, and it's all neat, of course. So another example of reusing is in the third slide, the third picture of that third slide, which is a whole bunch of wood that is in pieces. And instead of just going to the landfill, you know, one just needs to ask someone who's an arborist or someone who works with wood, hey, can I have some of that wood that's in your pile there, in your truck or whatnot? And they say, sure, and you have a bunch. And then if you want to bring that from the alley or wherever it is, you can use this thing called a sled. And this plastic sled thing has seen its better days. It was thrown away by professional users of it, and because they worn it all the way through. And if you look at it closely, you can see that there are some holes in it. And the question is, can you use it by itself with the holes in it? The answer is yes, assuming that it's not too heavy. And then the next obvious question would be, is it possible to mend those holes so that it's a lot better than leaving those gaping holes that can knife through the soil as it traverses it in sled action? So I think so. And the question then would be, you know, where do you get the plastic or the piece of whatever to glue on there? And should I glue it on the outside of it or glue it on the inside, probably on the inside, etc. So that's a reuse of a old sled, and also reusing and, you know, repurposing some wood that was going to the landfill. All right, so the next slide is a picture of a weed whacker, dumpster dived or found from someone who doesn't want it or need it. And you know, I went to the store and just got lucky because the equipment didn't say what thickness of the plastic wire to use for the whipping action, and I guessed right, and I installed some, and it worked like a charm. And there you go. Instead of it being discouraging and useless and not being used, it's now being effectively used on my property, because weeds tend to grow and you want to keep the weeds down, and sometimes the lawnmower just won't reach in some areas, so you have to weed whack or pull by hand. And so weed whacker is an option. It's I used electrical energy from 110 volt LG&E, but it might also run from a 12 volt battery with a AC converter as well, so you might not even need to draw from power from LG&E, which is natural gas or coal, and you can then instead use solar power, which generates a charge into the battery. Anyway, so that's the weed whacker that's currently been brought back from nowhere. And the next picture is of a wine-making apparatus, chemicals, equipment, a book from the library about how to do it. And there are some, rather than having a grape orchard to make grapes to make wine, one can start the easy way, which is to use raisins. And I think you can just, because raisins are just grapes that have been dried, so you need to add some water, I guess, to them. So that's that. And also, if you can also buy 100% apple juice. You can make apple cider wine, which apparently there's this person who went around visiting settlers, you know, 200 years ago. And his name is Johnny Appleseed, and apparently he not only just planted lots of apple trees, but he loved to make, hard cider out of it and imbibe in the alcohol associated with it. So here I thought he was just an apple grower guy, but he also loved to sell a little bit of alcohol, probably a little bit. But there you go. And some other features of starting up a little wine activity is to get some yeast. And so you'll see there's a pack of Red Star yeast. They're ready to go. And some sodium metasulfite, which is an inhibitor of bacteria, because there are certain times when you want the bacteria to not grow so the yeast can take over. And so it looks like that is a skill that you can use in order to avoid needing to go to the store to buy alcohol. You can just make fine beverages in your own home. And as long as you don't sell it to anybody else, you are free to use that and make it and use it. Next slide I have is a neighbor made a, someone in Portland here made a fence out of just metal, corrugated metal. And then they found a little daisy out of metal that looks so cute. And so basically has created a situation where the backyard is opaque, can't see back there. And it's made out of found objects, or at least reusing some old corrugated metal. And another instance, if you don't mind me continuing on with this slide, has to do with a picture of some sticks that are on all different angles. Well, that is a ladder, and it was rickety. It was rickety at the bottom. At the bottom of the picture, there is some additional wood pieces added on, and those additional added on pieces are needed in order to make the chair, make it stable on all 4 feet, because it kind of rotted a little bit, and so now it's robust there. And also it was a little rickety, so there was a cross piece at the steps, so like between the floor and the second step there is a diagonal piece of wood which stabilized it substantially, so now it's a nice dumpster dive ladder that's good to go, and it sure wasn't good to go before. Now the next slide has obviously some more interesting features with it associated with reskilling and reusing. The upper left is a neighboring house that had some rotting on the outside sill, and so a piece of wood that's has arsenic, what is that called, green wood, whatever it's called, it's treated wood, has been put out there as a replacement, and the window is no longer cracked, and then the pieces, and then just cleaning up around it. So you can take a window that's in bad shape and you can turn it around, and obviously once you take a little caulk to fill up the screw holes and a little paint, I mean, it'll look fantastic. So that's that. Another feature is if you happen to have a house that you want to use as some rooms for storage, you can make out of pretty much nothing a shelf that can be, eye level, shoulder level, something like that. You can put lots of boxes underneath it, as well as put boxes up high so they can be stacked all the way ceiling if you want to. How one goes about doing that is quite obvious here. Well, maybe it's not. In the picture, one can see that there is a flat piece, which is the surface that the boxes or storage items or whatever, that's the base of the shelf. But in the back of it, initially, on the wall, is drilled in is a piece of just a stick, just a small piece of board that is drilled into the wall and it's stabilized. So then that the shelf can be just rested right on top of that stabilized sideways stick that's been put onto the wall. Now you can certainly use a binder of studs. So there are a lot of different stud binders out there in the world, and if you use them, then you can know exactly where to put in the screws so that it stays firm because you've screwed into the studs. Now, the front part is a little bit tricky. You have the back piece in place, and then you rest the shelf on the back piece. And then you get a level, and well, obviously you made a level in order to make sure that the sideways stick is level. But then once you have that the shelf up, then you want to make it level front to back, and then maybe find something that you can stick up, like an old rake or something that can just hold it there at the level, and then you put in a diagonal piece of wood, and this happens to be what they call a 2x2, and they've been cut at angles on the ends of it, and such that it can aggressively, face the shelf, and then you put a screw into there, and put a screw into the wall in the very same region that has the stud, of course. And so that makes it a very strong, secure shelf made out of virtually nothing. And it's very, very used for all kinds of different things. So there you go. You can do that throughout your whole area that you want to have as shelving. There are other types of shelves, and I didn't have any as an example, but you can hang things from the ceiling as well. Just put an anchor, like a bike anchor, those bike hook anchor, find it to the stud of the ceiling, the joists, and then just hang a chain down, and you can also have shelves that are very strong held from the ceiling. Now, on the lower left-hand side, you will see that there is a upside-down table. It had a problem. It had one of the feet had fallen off, and it was secured in there before it fell apart by some dowels. And the dowels are probably be 1.5 inches long cylinders of wood, and they broke off. And so what needed to happen was needed to be redoweled. And the way you do that is you take a drill and you drill out the dowel, making sure you don't create a new area. You don't want to drill into stuff the wood of the table, but just the doweling itself. And once you drill that out, you clean it, you just kind of get rid of all the extra sawdust, and you do the same to the leg that separated from the table, and you dig that out, and then you put the dowel in. And then, well, before you put the dowel in, you put wood glue. So go to the store, get some Elmer's type. There's lots of different types of glues, and you put some glue in the hole, and you put the dowel in the hole, and then the glue kind of comes up a little bit to the amount, so that the whole space is filled with glue, and any excess pops out. And then the rest of the space, obviously, you fill with glue like you normally would, and you do that to the two pieces, you put them together, and then you can see the second picture there, which has some weights holding it down to make it a tight fit. These happen to be pieces of stone. And then you wait a certain amount of time, and there you go. It's good to go. So that is one way to basically take a unusable table and turn it back into a robust, usable table. Another reskilling that one can do if one wants to is to take a floor that is pretty bad shape, for instance, has, you know, is rotting in certain areas, and then you can take a saw and just saw all the rotted stuff away until you reach good solid wood, and then you can start rebuilding. How you rebuild them in this instance would be that you could put right down the center, for instance, there was a rotted piece of joist. So you just take a, you know, 2x4, 2x6, whatever fits, and that is the correct height for the rest of the floor. You put it in, you tie it in through screws on the far end and the near end, and make sure that it overlaps with the existing joist, and then you can screw those together, and it's kind of a sistering a little bit. Sistering, of course, is just putting two pieces together so that they have some overlap, and then you screw the overlap together, and they're sistered together in that area. And if you look at that same picture on the edge, you will see that there is an existing joist, and there's a whole nother sistered 2x4 there. That's in such a way that the existing flooring can have its full complement of attachment to the existing joist 2x4, and then the new flooring can have its own 2x4 in which it can rest. And so that's a good way for anyone to build a strong flooring. It's because the edges are very, very firm because of the sistering. And of course, on the very right-hand side, there's another joist that has been added as well. All those things being in place, one goes ahead then and finds a piece of flooring, for instance, in this instance it's just plywood, and put it down and screw it in, and there you have it. So that's a reskill right there, and I don't think there's any reuse, except for this piece of plywood in this picture is reused from somewhere else, and you see there's a little nick in one of the on the far edge there, so there's about a 4 or 5 inch square section that kind of exposed a little bit, but there's different ways to deal with that. And when the new it could actually just stay right there if there's some sort of an appliance or drawers that are covering it up, so that's something to keep in mind. As well, it may not be perfect, but it may do the job precisely well. So moving on to the next slide, which has a lot more greenery associated with it. The top slide has to do with reusing an empty lot, and it's a beautiful garden. I found that little pocket garden when I was biking to work on bike to work day. I stopped and took a picture because it's so beautiful what they did with stones and pavement, paver stones and plants and statues and the thoughtfulnesses associated with all those things. And another instance is a picture just below it of a very large tree which is removed, and then they gutted out the middle section and put soil in it, and it's a flower bed. So while the stump rots, it is now a beautiful little flower bed, which is really kind of enticing and enjoyable to look at. And then at the lower left of the picture, you can see a garden, which happens to be mine, and the tree in the back is producing, I think it's peaches, and so that's well on the way. And then raspberries are on the left, and primarily sage and blackberries are on the right. And so that's kicking off in the high gear right in mid-May. On the right, one can see, right bottom, one can see what is happening to Wharf Park in Portland. And if you don't mind, you could just look and see that there are dump trucks that are destroying the bike path. By the way, they're so heavy, they're just destroying all the pavement, so they'll have to redo all that. They don't care, they'll just do that in a heartbeat. But when they're taking all these rocks and they're just dumping it at the river, there's another picture of lots of trees that have been uprooted and piled up. That pile of trees, I've asked, can I go ahead and use that for burning firewood? And I haven't heard back from them. But certainly the trees are now gone from the side of the river. They're gone. And they're just putting up gravel right there, big, just kind of rocks. There's probably a name for it. But so I don't know what they're going to do, but they are remarkably changing the landscape of Lannan Park right there as we speak, which is stunning. An interesting feature one can look then of maybe reuse, upper right hand corner, has to do with a shed, an outside house, you know, outer house, and it has some holes that need to be kind of closed up. That I think one day, you know, I saw a cat go under and that was it. Like, there's no way that can happen, that can stay. So taking some really old bricks, broken, you can just go ahead and open and put those right down in the opening where the, you know, animals go in, and it prevents the large animals from going in. Now, because of its brokenness, mice probably might be able to go in there, but if there's cats around, the mice won't last long. But that is an instance of reusing some old bricks that are laying around. So always provide an opportunity for people to grab them from the alley rather than just throw them or bury them needlessly. Another instance of reskilling has to do with the fact that in the next slide, you'll notice that there is a vise, and the vise is very useful. I would recommend everyone has one. The vise is holding a nail straight up, and the nail was very dull because I didn't have a real sharp new nail. I had an old one, and it was dull, and I used a file, and that's what the picture is. It's a file that's filing down that nail, so the nail becomes sharp. And so taking a really old nail and making it really sharp by the vise grip and a file, and then using it, and then so as to avoid the need to have nice shiny new nails. Another instance of a reusing something is the middle upper picture, which has to do with a great big 6x6, which is kind of rotting and needs to be put into a pile for never being used again because it's so rotted. But there is an instance where the fence was leaning and the 4x4 is pretty firmly leaning and needs to be coaxed over a period of time of dry, cold, wet, and hot. And then it'll coax itself back up to being more vertical rather than leaning. And so that 4x4 is 6x6 is pretty strong and is heavy, and will kind of eventually make that fence post come back into place. So that's on its way out. That 6x6 is serving a good purpose, and then it'll be, I guess, probably thrown away. I just don't know what to do with an old thing such as that. On the upper right-hand corner has to do with the fact that there was some dumpster dive trampoline netting that is put up high above, that is attached off of a garage onto a fence, and it is thus a ceiling. It is from a kind of a netting to limit a little bit of the heat of the sun in the summertime. There was two big trampoline nets, and they were separated. And so in order to remove the daylight between them and have more netting, there was a little sewing that happened by means of sewing with a piece of stick. The piece of stick is probably 4 feet long, and the two pieces of netting were kind of overlapped a little bit, and then the stick went right through it, and then went down just in the sewing motion and weaved it all the way through, so that there is a stick hanging up there, and it's holding together the netting nicely when it wasn't that way before. Another instance of I would call reskilling or reusing has to do with the middle right of the picture on the middle right, which is a door that has had seen better days. It's starting to open up and widen, is starting to crack, and a way to bring it back into shape is to take a wrench, those ribbon, like a ribbon holding apparatus you can get at Barton Supply or other place, and it basically ratchets and tightens straps real tight, and through some using of a rubber mallet and the straps there, one can certainly heal the make the door a little less wide and more manageable, and so it can actually maybe someday it'll hopefully close. But that's an interesting way of using that strapping. If you don't mind me coming on with some other ideas about reskilling, reusing, have to do with the lower right-hand corner is a roof, and it's a metal roof, and initially, it was some pieces of plastic was put to protect the some holes, and that didn't last a season. So there's just some kind of discarded pieces of metal were found, put down, put bricks on top of it, and purchased caulk already, roofing caulk to go around the edges. And so that'll be much better than silly plastic that was just never going to work. And so in the meantime, those bricks are doing a good job of protecting from water coming in droves as it was before, while it's being fixed, of course. The middle bottom picture is of interesting. It's an interesting project to consider, and that is if one has lots of plaster that just turns to powder, if one's taken away down deplastering a wall, one has all this rubble and dust of plaster, one can consider the idea of taking that rubble and putting it through a screen, and then you all of a sudden have some plaster, which is fine particles. The big pieces are filtered out, and then you could probably add water to that, and you can reuse that as a plaster again for a procedure that you have. Not that you can't buy plaster at Lowe's or anybody else, or anywhere else, but it may be a way you could just make it from existing materials, same way you can make a cob apparatus. You can make that out of mud, straw, water, if there's not anything else, I don't know, but that's what the has been used for 1,000 years in Europe, cob. But this is just different of using stucco as a reusing it as a building tool for patching, etc. And then the lower left-hand picture is of these oak trees that are popping up. And before taking the mower and chopping it all down, took a few out and put them into a bucket and let them grow a little bit, and hopefully I'll be able to find a place to have those be planted and grow into fine trees. It's nothing wrong with having hope. And then lastly, the two slides of the very last slide, the two pictures, are of instances where tables were manufactured out of very little. So the upper of the left picture is of a dumpster dived alley found tabletop, and it had no legs. So 2x4s were found and inserted, and it now is a table which can be used, no problems. I mean, obviously it's not perfect and et cetera, but it's very functional, and it was on its way out to being useless, and now it has a use. And the picture on the right is plywood and 2x4s down below, and it is a nice table for where I'm going to plan to be doing some winemaking. So it's a great place that didn't exist before and now does exist, and we'll see where that goes to. But it's reusing. All those materials are found from other places, not purchased, and we'll see about reskilling in terms of using that as a place to learn all about different aspects of, like I said, making a wine or maybe kombucha or other kind of liquid concoctions that require a little bit of organic metabolism in order to make the final product. So with that, I don't know that I have any ideas for doing anything for leaving, except to say that, whoa, we're just about done here. And to say, I think maybe I'll go ahead and in that last verse, because I do want to get that out there. And don't forget, this Friday, Saturday, there'll be more guitar playing. But here we go. I tip my hat to the new constitution, take a bow for the new revolution, smile and grin at the changes all around, pick up my guitar and play, just like yesterday, then I'll get on my knees and pray that we don't get fooled again. Yeah, don't get fooled again. Here goes. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. That's how the song ends. And that is the end of our today's time of reskilling and reusing for a happy day in May. So, Nate Peterson signing off. Remember, you can go listen to this and see the slides at metagenny.com/reskill. Metagenny is spelled MetaGeny.com. And if you want to, go ahead and somehow communicate with the folks. And if we want to actually get a radio station going, that's perfectly fine too. But for now, here we are, just doing little podcasts at the library on a Tuesday night, last Tuesday. Okay, until next month, last Tuesday in June, Nate Peterson signing off. Okay, that's it.